I know for me, reading a Michael Peary book is kind of like catching up with an old friend. I think a lot of us have enjoyed being along for the ride as Michael has told stories of his growing into being a farmer, a husband, a parent. And in his book, Visiting Tom, A Man, a Highway, and the Road to Roughneck Grace, Michael shares his thoughts and experiences. And he also introduces us to Tom Hartwig. And if you've read the book, you know that Tom is quite a character. And Mike's our ticket into Tom's world and what he sees in his world. And a lot of people have enjoyed Michael's tales about Tom, about life on the farm, and the ties that hold a rural community together. In fact, Visiting Tom is coming out in paperback next week, and it's a New York Times bestseller, and it's always a pleasure to have Michael Peary with us. He joins us today from our WPR studios in Eau Claire. Michael Peary, so good to have you back with us.
Thank you for having me, Larry. It's good to be here.
Oh, I tell you what, it's always great, and you're a busy guy.
It's called self-employed and self-insured. That's the do whatever it takes, a little bit of juggling, figuratively anyway. Happy to be doing it, though.
Yeah, happy to be doing it. Well, I tell you what, we've talked, you and I have talked about Visiting Tom on the book when it was out in hardcover, but let's talk a bit about it now. It introduces us to Tom and Arlene Hartwig, and for those who haven't read the book yet, how did you first meet them?
I met Tom and Arlene through my now wife. She grew up in rural Fall Creek, at least part of her life, and then right in Fall Creek, Wisconsin. And she was on Tom's hay crew when she was a young woman. And Tom told me that she could outwork any man he ever hired. And I took that to heart and realized it was less a testament to her character than a challenge to my own. But she took me to meet them, and I remember that because it was a big deal for me, because I felt so comfortable when I stepped into their rough kitchen there, because it reminded me of the kitchen of my childhood. But it also was instructive, or at least got my attention in a different way, and that was the fact that my wife admired these folks and wanted to go back to pay her respects, and that taught me a lot about the woman that then became my wife, too. So, yeah. So that's how I met him. Now we're just neighbors. Tom is about 2 miles from me as the crow flies, and I mainly go over to see him whenever I need something welded or some steel cut or something fixed. My abilities there are pretty limited, and his are extensive. And then occasionally we just go over, and my wife and our daughters will take a pork chop over there and have dinner. In the book I wrote Tom and Arlene, it was Arlene's dream to see her 60th wedding anniversary with Tom. And I can say in bittersweet news that they did indeed make their 60th anniversary. However, in the last year, not so long ago, we did lose Arlene. And so Tom is adjusting to that. And he's got a lot of support, a lot of neighbors, and he's feeling a very great loss. But in other ways, you know, he's out there tending his honeybees and working on his lathe like he always did.
Yeah. Shooting his cannon off once in a while.
Yes, sir. July 5th, we went over there with a whole bunch of the neighbors, and he shot several, fired several rounds. Everyone was highly entertained.
So he's I was going to ask you what he's up to, but I imagine it's been really hard. You spend 60 years with somebody.
Yeah, 60 years. I wrote in the book about the first time Arlene saw him, he was riding a 1947 or 48, I can't remember which, Harley with a sidecar. But he didn't make the impression he hoped, because it was a Sunday morning and he drove right up the sidewalk and Arlene was in church with her mother, and Tom drowned out the service and her mother forbade her to go with that man. So he regrouped and returned to town in a white convertible, and he was wearing a red shirt. And right to the very end, I loved hearing Arlene tell that story, because she'd describe him in that convertible and that shirt, and her eyes would light up like she was 19 again.
But that it's a great story, and did his life change much when, you know, this book? I mean, it's a bestseller. You changed his name.
I changed his last name. That was his only request. Mm-hmm. I got his permission before doing the book. I would say that his life has changed hardly at all, except that he wound up in the hospital in the past year. I'm happy to say that he made a full recovery and is back out. But he did sign a few books while he was in the hospital. He said nurses and doctors would show up with a copy of the book and ask him to sign it, which was great. And a few folks have, you know, if you're in the area, you can pretty well figure out where he lives. And there have been some folks who've stopped in. And my favorite thing is that they would ask Arlene to sign the book as well. And I liked that because she's just was such an essential part of Tom. But in general, no. I mean, I love the fact that it was a New York Times bestseller. And the publisher loves to splash that everywhere. And I hope that you understand how grateful I am that that happened. It also was number 21 for 1 week. So we're not Price and Learjets here.
But it's...
Tom's one of those guys. He's not really going to change. And it's been fun, you know, dealing... I'm actually quite relieved. When the book was over, it was really nice just to go back to being his neighbor. Not fact-checking anymore, not transcribing interviews, just shooting the breeze without having to worry about getting it all down. But he's funny because I said to him once, you know, we sat down three or four times and went through the entire book, and I would say, make sure that I get the right dates and the right numbers and everything correct because it's nonfiction. And we did that several times and got most of the things. There are always a few mistakes you find after the fact. But one day I'm sitting there with him and I said, Tom, it's going to print now. You gotta let me know if we got everything. He goes, oh, yeah, we got pretty much everything. And then he goes, it doesn't matter, though, because you changed my name, so I'm telling everybody it's fiction. I didn't want to bore Tom with a discussion of the nuances of the genre, but I did say, oh, no, Tom, it's really important that we not do fiction. So that's kind of Tom in a nutshell. He goes his own way.
Michael Perry, our guest today, author, humorist, musician, host of Ten Show Radio, and author of Visiting Tom, A Man, A Highway, and The Road to Roughneck Grace, among other books, as a matter of fact. It's great to have him along. You may have a question or a comment for him. Have you read Michael's books? Do you have a favorite? What is it about Michael's way of telling a story that you enjoy? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org with your questions, or go on my Facebook page to The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or comment there. And we also have a link to Michael's page, his online page, where he has information on the book, ordering the book, and also on all of the events. Man, you're a busy guy. You're on the road a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the things we could have people call in about is to tell me whether or not I should cut my oats before I go on book tour. I'm not a farmer. I get cast as a farmer a lot, but I have a little plot of oats. I hand-sowed it, and I'm going to leave on book tour for about 5 weeks. A week from now, and sure enough, the oats is kind of half green, half brown. Oh. So I'm going to get hung, I think. But luckily, I've got great neighbors. I was going to mention too on the website, right at the top, since I knew I was going to be on the radio today, we've got a link to the book information and also a video that shows Tom and describes the book and shows him shooting his cannon. But we also have a new video we just put up there about a week ago that my father-in-law shot of Tom using his cannon to demolish a silo. Which really worth the price of admission right there. So, and that's all at sneezingcow.com should be at the top. But yeah, I'm on the road a lot because, things are changing. We can talk about bestsellers and that sort of thing, but the book industry is in a real state of flux and change. And for many, many reasons, we could do a 3-hour show on that. But the bottom line is I kind of saw that coming a while back and had watched how a lot of my musician friends had dealt with the new age and realized that live performance would be one of the ways that I would supplement my book and writing income. And so far, it's worked pretty good. I'm pretty self-contained. It's mostly just me in the minivan with a box of books.
Yeah, and it's, as you go online, you see, okay, well, I can get the book, an audio book, or I could get the Kindle version, or...
Sure, it's a new age, and you know, my feeling on all that stuff, there are parts of it that are very daunting, and especially for me, I'm a guy, and you know, if you're listening and you're near one of these places, I was absolutely brought along in the first couple of years by independent booksellers who hand sold my book and talked about it, and that's why, if you notice my book tours, they're almost exclusively concentrated there. But you also have to live in the real world, and I think that you have to navigate these things. And so one of the ways I'm trying to navigate it is by going out and doing a lot of things in person. I like it, too. It's a, you know, as a writer, I love being alone. I'd never come out. I write in a little tiny room over our garage out there on a farm. I'd never come out of there if I didn't have to, and it'd probably be better for everybody if I stayed there. But there is this business of being all alone and writing stuff and just sending it out. And so for me, the one thing I really love about live events is you have a chance to, after the event, and you sit and sign books, and it's a chance to just look folks right in the eye and tell them thanks, because they are, after all, helping me feed my family.
Absolutely. And you, you're not only writing books. I mean, I've really looked forward to your articles in the Wisconsin State Journal on Sundays, and I expect that column may appear in other papers as well. Maybe not.
Well, actually, right now, just there, and that's been a real nice arrangement. I appreciate them approaching me on that, because I do these monologues for Tent Show Radio, and my agreement with the Journal is I can do kind of a hybrid of both, and then now I've got a bunch of columns lined up for the future that are completely from new cloth. And so it's been good. And it's, you know, writing those monologues and writing that column has also been good for me, because I kind of put myself in a corner. I'm a guy who likes to write and rewrite and polish and revise, and it takes me forever. And when you write those weekly monologues or a weekly column, you learn pretty quickly. You've got to get your 600 to 700 words and get them done, make them coherent, and move on to the next thing. And so that's been a lot of fun, and I think it's been a good time in my quote unquote career for me to put myself in that position. It's kind of like running wind sprints again. So, that's been very enjoyable, and always linked to those through the Facebook site and the website. I'll tell you, one of the projects that I'm involved in right now is just looking at the proofs for it. This won't be out until, I think, October, and certainly we'll let people know, but I got to write the liner notes for the next Blind Boys of Alabama album.
Yeah.
And it's such a left field deal for me. I was approached out of the blue, and a young fella, as I can call him because of my age, a young guy named Justin Vernon, who had a little band called Bon Iver, and somewhere along the line they picked up a couple of Grammys, lives near me and has a studio, and he produced the upcoming Blind Boys of Alabama album. And they asked me to write the liner notes, and it was just a privilege, and it was almost a chance to write in a poetic form, very short form again. Pretty excited about that. So
that is very cool. Gosh.
Yeah, these are the things that I feel so grateful for what I do. And it's one thing to be able to, I never dreamed I'd be able to write books and that sort of thing, but to get an assignment like that out of the blue is really cool, because I have a long time, of course, admirer of the Blind Boys and their work.
Yeah. No, they're wonderful, wonderful work. Michael Perry, our guest today, author, humorist, musician, host of Tent Show Radio. We're talking with him about his book and his books and his life. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. And Becky and Kate and the rest of you, we'll get to you in just a minute or two here. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Michael Perry and having a great fun doing it. And he's going to be with us up until about 11:45 today. And then Jerry Apps joins us.
Please give my regards to Jerry. Boy, what a wonderful body of work he's put together.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. He's done wonderful work. It's going to be, he's always fun to, just like with you, as with you, he is a lot of fun to talk to.
Just a couple of country boys running their yappers, as my brother would say.
Oh, man. Kate in Pewaukee is online. Kate, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm an unpaid sponsor. No, I just think Michael's books are wonderful, And we have gone to hear him in Oconomowoc, and he came to Pewaukee, and he probably thinks I'm stalking him. But if you have a chance, please, please go hear him. And it's just wonderful. You have such an interesting presentation style, and we just love you. And I'm wondering how you're doing on the three books that you're working on.
Well, I was working on one of them about 10 minutes before we came on air. So I have three books in the hopper. Obviously, the paperback's coming out next week, but I have three new books in the hopper. And I'm going in a little different direction for the next couple of books. I just sent in the rough draft of a young adult novel, or it may be a middle grade novel. These things are being sorted out. And that's, as I said, complete, but needs some serious revision, and my editor has it right now. And then I have a novel, just a regular old novel coming out.
Boy.
And then the third book that I have to get done next year is a book about the French philosopher and essayist Montaigne, or Montaigne, as some folks call him. And he's just a guy that I'm an amateur fan of, and they let me write a book about him. So I'm looking forward to that.
Wow. All those. So you like to keep lots of things in the air at once.
It's called juggler. Diversifying your portfolio, Larry. It's the key to success. You just keep firing and something will hit. Yeah. And I appreciate her saying that about the live stuff. I have a lot of fun doing that. As I said, I really am pretty much a loner by habit. But once I get out, being up on stage and doing the monologues and telling the stories is a lot of fun because you get that instant warm audience feedback. And enjoy that.
When you were talking about plowing the snow, and you just took on that, you know, He-Man persona as
right.
You're talking. And
which I can never support in real life, which is always what the punchline of the story is.
So, well, good luck with everything, and I look forward to seeing you again.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Kate. Peggy and Hilbert, your turn. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. Hey, I was just calling to make a comment to Michael about I have an older son, and he reads a lot. And we typically don't share very many interests in common when it comes to that. But we discovered that we both love Michael Perry.
And oh, that's nice.
And so it's always interesting when I've read something, then it'll be like, so, Michael, have you read it, you know? Or he'll tell me something that he's read. And it's just nice. And I think that with Michael, I always feel like I'm sitting down with him in my house and we're having a conversation together. Just a very easy, enjoyable read that I thoroughly look forward to anything new that he writes.
Mm. Oh, thank you. And that means a lot to me, probably even more than it would have a few years back, because I've got two daughters and one just turned 13, and she's a delight. It's an honor to have her in my life. But you always wonder at when those years begin how you'll relate. And we do have a few things that we both enjoy and we both relate to. So it's wonderful to hear that in this case.
Thank you so much and keep on writing.
All right. Almost have to at this point. So.
You know, I think I've said this to you before, but your writing always appears so effortless. But having done a bit of writing myself, I know how hard it can be. It's like sweating blood.
Yeah, sometimes. You know, it's tricky because when you come from, you know, my brother's still an active farmer and logger. I've got another brother who runs heavy equipment. My dad's a farmer and a logger. My sister works in a factory. And so you don't want to get too carried away with, hand to the brow talking about how difficult this is. But the truth is, it's like any craft, any job. If you got to just get in there and work at it. And writing does not come naturally to me. I mean, listen to me talk. And so I revise and revise. And I think if you go to sneezingcow.com and if you search I think it's the tag called writing or how to be a writer, eventually in there somewhere you'll find I occasionally put up some photos of drafts I'm working on. And oh my goodness, it looks like a wreck at the ink factory. And it just takes me forever to get things how I want them.
I remember you saying once that nursing helped you as a writer.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a bachelor's degree in nursing. I worked a little while as a nurse. I enjoyed it. I just did that very early in my nursing career. I got accidentally interested in writing and got sidetracked for about 25 years. But I went to the UW-Eau Claire School of Nursing, and we studied under what was called the Loomis and Wood model, and it was a holistic assessment model. And what I mean by that is that you didn't, when you saw a patient, you didn't just focus on their abdominal pain or their elbow pain. You certainly took that into account, and you assessed it, and you did blood pressures and all vital signs and health history. But you also, you know, tried to assess their psychosocial situation and any other dynamics that might be coming into play. And so you learned to do this very holistic assessment of a person, not just a symptom. And I've always said that that's what, you know, what is writing but human assessment. And so I think nursing really helped me in that way. Also just in the fundamental gathering of information.
Yeah.
And then the other one I always tell is that I've been saying this a couple of times today, but I really am a loner and I'm quite shy. I can get up on a stage, I can do my material, but day to day I'm pretty shy. And one of the things that's tough when you're a writer is you're often asking people personal questions and you're kind of snooping around and making cold calls to interview people. And that's not easy for me, but I always fall back on my nursing education, which taught me to go into a small room with a complete stranger, ask them to take their clothes off and tell me about their bowel habits. And I always figure if you can do that as a nurse, well, then you certainly aren't going to face much difficulty as a writer.
So. Oh, that's wonderful. Bill in Madison loves your writing, and Justin Isherwood as well. Great fun writers to read. And wonders if you ever got together with Justin and shared your thoughts about writing for your audience, you know, the people of the state.
Now, I'm getting to that point where my memory is not infallible, so I have to offer that caveat. But I don't believe that Justin and I have ever met. I've read much of his work, and I recommend it often, especially because I like Justin's can be pretty frank, and I'm not always good at that, and his stuff is great. I don't believe we've ever met. Now, maybe I'll find out we did, and I've insulted him, but I'm very familiar with his work. And I think, again, relying on my own memory here, which is really about 2 out of 5 stars, but I believe in Visiting Tom, I mentioned, or at least in one of the drafts I did, that Justin talked about my favorite old farmhouses, and I believe he called them White Ladies, and he has an essay of that title, I believe. Yeah.
Brian in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Mike, well, one of the things I really enjoyed, my wife and I both have been to see a couple of your signings and different things, but one of the things I really enjoy, I grew up in Ohio, and my family there, I still introduce you to them through your vignettes that you did for Wisconsin Public Television. I usually have them start with grousing.
Yeah. I had hair yet when I did that grousing.
Yes, they are a bit old, but I think they're classic little bits of your style, and you know, it definitely describes Wisconsin. I've been here 21 years now, and so I think it's a great introduction to Wisconsin for anybody from outside the state.
I appreciate that. I've actually got 2 stops in Ohio. I don't know if it's anywhere near your friends there, but I'm going to be in Hudson, Ohio, and Delaware, Ohio. So I'll be getting down that way.
Mm-hmm. Delaware, yeah, Columbus. That's where I'm from.
Oh yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I always say I'm an ambassador of the frozen tundra. I'm trying to. Especially when I go, and I'm this book tour, I'm doing it again. I get to tour out in the San Francisco Bay Area, and people always say, "Well, do people get your humor out there?" And I go, "Oh yeah, they get it, but the laugh—it's a different kind of laugh." Like when I do my around this part of the country, when I do my bit about artificial and bovine insemination, it gets the laugh of recognition. When I do that bit out in San Francisco, it still gets a laugh. It's just a laugh of shock.
That's great. Oh, I love it. Thanks, Brian, for calling, by the way. And you can join in, too, by the way, if you have a question or comment, maybe an experience to share with Michael Perry. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Listener Pete in River Falls I wanted to give a shout-out to you from the grandsons of Fat Albert.
Oh,
Pete's
sure.
grandpa would live next to you when he was growing up, when you were growing up.
Oh, sure, yeah. Fat Albert, I believe I wrote about him in Truck, mostly. It might have been in Coop. I don't remember. Or as one radio host called it, Co-op. that's my fault, not his. But, Fat Albert was the guy right around the bend from us, up where I grew up in the town of Sampson there. And although he was, as is often the case with nicknames, he, of course, was thin as a rail, which was mm-hmm. part of the joke. But what a fine, kind man he was. And we just lost him here in the last couple of years. But, boy, my brother went through some pretty tough stuff. To put it mildly, and Fat Albert was one of the old fellas that was there for him.
Amy and Appleton, just to shift gears here, wanted you to tell the story about your older daughter's phone call after your youngest daughter's birth.
Oh, yeah. This is one of my favorite stories. I appreciate her letting me tell it. So I have to try and do this Cliff's Notes version, which I'm not good at. I tend to go on and on and off on tangents and abstracts and everything. But so my elder daughter she was 3 when I met her and her mother. And I always say I don't care for the term stepdaughter. I don't find it offensive or troubling or anything like that. I think it's a term that adequately conveys the situation but is utterly inadequate in conveying the heart. And a friend that's a poet and a Vietnam vet and a rough-hewn fellow once gave me the wonderful gift of a word when he said, she's not your stepdaughter, she's your given daughter. And I love that term, and that's how I feel about my elder daughter. She's just a wonderful person to have in my life, and I've been given her. Her father lives in Colorado. He has since married. She has 2 brothers out there, and we just I'm blessed to say that we're all in good communication. We visit them. They visit us. We stay at their place. And it may look a little unusual from the outside, but it's wonderful how it's all worked out. And the story that I tell that just kind of sums up how wonderful it is that when our second daughter was born, our youngest, we had her at home in the old farmhouse, and she was born upstairs. And right after she was born and safely arrived, of course, throughout the pregnancy, we'd been updating our Colorado family and letting them know how things were going. So the big day comes, the youngest daughter is born, and my elder daughter, my given daughter, says, can I call my dad and give him the news? And I said, absolutely, go ahead and do it. So I hear her go pounding down the stairs. She's about 7 at the time, 6 or 7. Pounding down the stairs, I hear her pick up the phone, I hear her dial, and I can hear him answer. And with no prelude, she just says immediately, well, you're a dad again. And that works for us. So.
Oh, that is such a great story. Oh, I love that story. Oh, man. I don't know if did that story appear in your book?
I believe that was in Coop / Co-op.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, man. A Facebook comment from Bettina says, I'm loving this interview. I live in a small town, and the book Population 485 really hit a nerve with me. I've given this book to many people as gifts. I have our library buy each of Michael's books as well, and I'm hoping to get him out to Utah.
Oh, all right.
For an author's night or reading.
These stranger things have happened. No, I love that. There's there are ways to get me out there. It always, of course, comes down to calendar, geography, and budget usually. But I'll go to Utah. I like the fact that the other fellow called and we talked about Wisconsin, and I love being of and from Wisconsin. But I also feel fortunate when the stories resonate in other places.
A Facebook comment.
And by the way, I appreciate her spreading the gospel.
Yeah, that's pretty nice.
That's my bread and butter. So thank you, Bettina.
That's pretty nice. Daniel offers congratulations on your book, making the list and all. But says, however, as a fellow Northlander, I won't feel you have truly made it until I hear Carl Schmidt read your book on Chapter a Day. Just saying.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, it's been the first 2 or 3. Yeah, the first 3 books were on Chapter a Day. So
yeah,
We'll wait to see. That's one. I love that. Obviously, I love that program, but I loved it before I was ever a quote-unquote author, and I love the story of being on my very first book tour. I was driving across Nebraska on I-80 in my old Chevy Malibu, and I had my very first cell phone, and it rang, and it was a publicist from New York, and he said, there's some radio station in Wisconsin, and they want to read your book on the air. It's called Chapter a Day. Is that something you want to do? And I said, you need to hang up the phone and call those people and tell them yes, and where do we sign? Because I knew what it meant for the book, and it was, yeah, it was great. It's great. I've had so many people tell me they first heard my books on Chapter a Day.
That's
a lot of mail carriers.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
I have. I know we have a great audience of rural mail carriers who are in the car all day, and it's great to have them. You know, talking about reading it on Chapter a Day. What about this book as a movie?
Visiting Tom or Population?
Well, either one.
Well, Population 485 has been optioned, I think, twice. Once for a movie and once for a television series. And I love to say that because it sounds really big shoddy and like I'm taking meetings in Hollywood. But what it really means is that you get a check that's just about enough to cover 3 weeks of health insurance. And then they basically just put your story on hold for a year, and then they don't renew it, and you never hear from anyone again. My favorite quote about movie options is the very first time it happened, someone contacted me about getting the movie rights to my book. And so I have a literary agent in New York, and I called her, and I was pretty jacked up. And I said, oh, there's somebody wants to make a movie out of the book, and you know, and they want to get the rights to it and everything. And so she very calmly gets all the information, and I said, well, what do you think? And she said, when it comes to movies and books, she said, I'll tell you when to get excited. And I have to say that book's been out for 11 years, been optioned a couple of times, and so far I will say I'm working on a project with someone to be named later to adapt it to stage.
Oh.
And we'll see how that goes. And then there are, I know, a couple of screenplays of the book floating around out there. But no, nothing so far. Although even that is an exciting time because people are finding new ways to get movies done, too. So who knows?
Who knows? Shelley and Trigo, thank you for calling. Hi.
Oh, man, Trigo.
Hey, good morning. Yes, Trigo. I am one of those rural mail carriers you were just talking about, and I appreciate you being on. I've enjoyed many of your co-op books. but I want to ask, are you available to download like on Nook or your Kindle?
Yeah, all of the HarperCollins books are available on Nook or Kindle, and we're even in the process of sometime in the next 3 months, because we're about halfway through the paperwork and everything, making some of my old self-published books available in electronic
and then
format.
To introduce a new reader to you, should your books be read in the order they were written, or are they just kind of a jump in?
I always say the books Population 485, Truck, A Love Story, Coop, and then Visiting Tom are definitely written in sequence. Having said that, so it's not a bad idea, but having said that, each one, I very consciously write each one so that if for some reason you started with the last one, that would work too. It's just, there are a few things that carry over from book to book where I hesitate to even call them spoilers because it's people's real life. But so it's it helps if you read them in that order, but it's not absolutely necessary.
All right. Well, it's good to talk to you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Trigo, my band and I, the Longbeds, we've been debuting a new song at our last few concerts, and it's got a line in there. It starts out, 3 miles out of Trigo, I felt a rock in my shoe and thought of you.
Wonderful. Shelley, thanks again for calling. Oh.
Anybody who's ever been up north knows where Trigo is.
Oh, yeah.
It means you're getting to where you're going, but you still got a ways to go.
Ways to go. Joe in Loganville, hi.
Hi, Michael. I met you years ago at the EMS convention. You signed my book for Population 485. I've enjoyed all your books. And actually, I'm up in Osseo right now. I'm a truck driver, farmer, slash a little bit of everything, first responder, fireman. and I'll probably be passing Tom's farm again today. I figured out which one it was, and every time I drive by, I say, oh, there's Tom's farm.
Yeah, the silo's still right there, right beside the interstate. And then if you're careful, make sure you check all your blind spots first. I don't want anybody getting hurt. But then if you look off up against the tree line there, you can see the big target for his can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I've seen that up there, too. Like I say, I've got everything figured out. I saw a snow blower. I figured out where the sawmill sits.
Yeah, it's all right there. Yeah,
it's quite enjoyable drive. Like I say, it's kind of comical. It's like every time I go up to the cities there, I try and figure out where the farm was, and I finally found it. And I just really enjoyed the book.
Well, thank you. And if when you're coming back from the cities and you're headed, I guess it's technically east, but it seems south to me on 94 there, about 1 or 2 miles south of Tom's place there. If you look off to the right, there's an old International pickup sitting out in a farmer's field, and that's the International that's on the cover of the hardcover of the book Truck.
Ah!
Yeah, I just saw it the other day. It's still there.
Still sitting there.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite stories about guys and old trucks, because when we went to take pictures of it, it's been there for 30, if not 40 years, and it's sunk into, grown into the dirt. And I asked the guy, I said, hey, could I buy that from you for parts and stuff? He says, oh, no, I'm going to fix it up someday.
Joe, thanks again for calling. And Dee and Amory, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to share something with Mike when he was talking about his oldest daughter. We had foster children, and then we also had younger children. And we had an ongoing argument when we talked about birth dates that I did not give birth to that whole tribe. It was constant. We would go through when everybody was born and who was the mom, and I was everybody's mom.
Yeah. Yeah, and I grew up in, I guess nowadays we call it a blended family, too. I had adopted siblings and foster siblings and quote-unquote blood siblings. Yeah, blurry lines as they should be.
The blurry lines, you're absolutely right. Well, Michael, I tell you what, this has been a real joy to have a chance to visit with you. I thank you so much for being with us today, and I hope you sell a million hard, soft cover copies of that book.
I'll shoot for that. We'll aim high. In the meantime, I'll keep all those other things in the fire, too, just in case that doesn't happen. Thanks so much. It just flies by, and thanks to everybody who called and listened. Appreciate that.
Now, Michael Perry, author, humorist, musician, host of 10 Show Radio. His most recent book, Visiting Tom, A Man, A Highway, and the Road to Roughneck Grace. And one of the comments he made was how much he admired and enjoyed Jerry Apps. And guess what? Jerry Apps is coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.